You're listening to Take Your Health to Heart with Dr. Joseph Kalisha. The doctors are on call to take your call toll-free at 1-800-TALK-997. That's 1-800-TALK-997. Now, here's Dr. Joseph Kalisha.
Good morning, and welcome to our broadcast of Take Your Health to Heart. I'm Dr. Kalisha, and joining me today, one of our regulars on the show, Dr. Peter McCander. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Jody.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
You're not working
you?
This weekend. You look like you're nice and casual.
Oh, I got a lot of work at home to do, though.
Well.
A lot of non-medical work.
The medical work piles up, too, on the weekends. We have a team in there doing all kinds of things right now. Also joining us from Miami, Florida, Dr. Arnon Krongrad. Good morning, Arnon.
Hi, Jody. How are you?
Hey, it's great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Now, you've been on the show before, and at the time you were here, we were talking about a new kind, or maybe not brand new. You've done this for a while. A kind of prostate operation, prostate resection, which doesn't involve a robot and doesn't involve opening up the area of the groin or the abdomen or wherever you're doing this, a pelvic area, to do an open operation. But you have a company that I think is really a unique opportunity for people all around the world. Tell us about that.
You're describing Mobile Surgery International, which was put together to help patients access care, and very specifically to preserve treatment choice,
right,
which is at risk of eroding, and treatment quality, which every patient deserves. So let's start with the fundamental philosophical premise that every patient deserves choice and quality.
Right.
Let us then examine why patients cannot have choice and quality in every instance. Patients face all kinds of barriers. The economic barrier is one that we're all talking about as a society. It's been very much on our minds because of the economic situation and healthcare reform. So patients face economic barriers. They face cultural barriers. For example, patients from the U.S. may not want to go to Mexico because there are certain cultural biases, just as one of many, many such examples.
And you or go to the Far East somewhere where you can't speak the language and you don't know what the culture is like. You don't even know what the hospital is like sometimes.
It's foreign, therefore it's scary. It may not be inferior, but to you it's scary. So economic, cultural, and geographical barriers to treatment choice. Patients face all kinds. Now, let me be clear. When I say patients, I do not necessarily mean an individual patient. Patients writ large. Employers who insure their employees. Insurance companies who are responsible for helping patients get to treatment choice and treatment quality, governments that insure their populations, not necessarily American governments, although including American government, right? So patients generally face all kinds of challenges as they seek to access what is the most appropriate thing for them. Our company is designed to help those patients overcome those barriers by introducing a service culture. It isn't really an innovation in the sense that it draws on the inspirations of the house call, one of the oldest features of the medical profession. One of my personal earliest memories was going on a house call when I was six. My dad was moonlighting. He's a cardiologist. Somebody was having chest pain. Doctor goes to patient. When we begin to think in those sorts of administrative terms, it's this operating model of a globalized, modernized house call on steroids, if you will, you begin to see that you can begin to not only optimize the fit between surgeons and patients, clinical fit between them, but then land those surgeon-patient pairs in places that help to overcome the barriers that I mentioned, the economic, cultural, and geographical barriers. And if you want, we can look at an example to understand how powerful the model can be.
Okay, let's talk about this. I'm very excited because you did your first case here at Kalisha Heart Hospital day before yesterday?
Yep, yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. The patient just went home.
Right. Wow.
Pretty
now,
recent.
First of all, your concept was to bring this technology, this kind of surgical procedure, which is unique, here to our hospital. But the patient was not from here. He is from South Carolina, and so he came here. All of you traveled here to do the procedure here. Why'd you do that?
We're talking about a patient who had had previous open abdominal surgery. He had had a bowel resection. He had bowel leakage. It was a very complicated adventure for this guy and quite a miserable one. He recently developed a situation that required for him to have his prostate removed. That was the treatment choice. Remember, our first name is all about treatment choice. The patient chose this. It is clinically quite relevant to him. It's an appropriate treatment. So he sought out to find this. Now, we're dealing with somebody who does not want open surgery for all the right reasons, and he wants it done laparoscopically in a complicated situation, the previous abdominal surgery, which makes things really complicated. And obviously, he wants somebody who does it really, really well. So, in addition to that, the context is he's uninsured. So he's extremely price sensitive.
Yeah.
Right? When you're paying everything out of pocket, the money, you're looking at the money closely. So you've got a complicated situation. He began to look around in the region that he lives, which is outside the state of Kansas, and discovered that there was nobody in his region that could do minimally invasive prostate resection in this kind of situation. All right? And so the first barrier that he faced was the geographical barrier. He then began to look outside his region, and he identified people outside his home state of South Carolina who he thought had sufficient experience and could deliver the quality that he needed so he could get back to doing what he does. He's a farmer, okay?
Yeah. So that's how he found you.
Well, it's how he got to me, because he began to look. I'm in Florida. He's in South Carolina.
Right.
We're not talking in Kansas. So he found me in Florida. Well, then he faced another barrier. So first the geographic. He solved that by looking outside. Then he looked to Florida, and he faced an economic barrier for the simple reason that things are relatively expensive in the city of Miami when it comes to medical care. So all the barriers that we started talking about, this guy was facing. And he had limited means, not insured, all of this. Okay. We solved his problem by assembling a surgical team that had done thousands of these kinds of operations, including in some very complicated situations, previous abdominal aortic aneurysm resection, Whipple procedures, you know, a treatment for pancreatic cancer, radiation, pelvic abscess, a very, very experienced team, so we could deliver the quality that he wanted. There was a barrier between the patient and that quality called economics, right? Couldn't
Surely.
Afford to have
right.
Where the team was stationed. And so what we then did is we mobilized the patient and the surgical team right here to Kansas. And this is how we helped him overcome the geographic and the economic barriers to treatment choice and treatment quality. And the proof is in the pudding. He had surgery yesterday at a price that he could afford. It's much more cost efficient here, and we can talk about how we made this cost efficient here, what we did with the hospital to enable us to deliver things more cost efficiently. And he's home this morning.
Yeah. Well, one thing I like about this whole thing is that there is a market factor here, in a sense. You know, you've got a situation where this gentleman sought you out. You know, he wasn't assigned to you by an insurance company. He sought you out because of your skills, the unique kind of operations that you do. Then our hospital, Galicia Heart Hospital, provided a cost that was bearable, and so that made it better for him. And the environment is very good. How did it work at Galicia Heart Hospital? We don't do these procedures every day. You came in here. You brought your team. How did that go?
Things went smoothly, just as they would have at home. There was absolutely no difference. And this brings up the essential lesson of the house call. And that lesson is quality is mobile. So in other words, if you have a team that knows what it's doing, it can walk into a foreign environment and deliver quality from the start. What it also did in this case, which was important to us to be able to deliver things at a cost that this patient could bear, which represented, I think in this case, about a 60% discount relative to what it would have been in Florida, for example, is we were able to bring in certain subject expertise, surgical subject expertise, walk into your OR, into your operating room, and identify the equipment that we would need for this procedure that even you, a heart hospital, didn't understand you had. So we were able to walk in, identify excess capacity, which exists all around us, but it certainly exists here. We were able to bring in certain tools that you didn't have, kind of the Netflix model, the surgical service. We mm-hmm. share things so the cost drops for everybody. And so we were able to, again, not only deliver the quality and the treatment choice, we were able to help you to deliver cost efficiency, which allows us to help the patient overcome the economic and geographical barriers.
Right. It was the kind of situation, if we had to go out and buy a whole bunch of new equipment, couldn't do this operation probably as cheaply as we are.
You'd have to pass on the cost to somebody.
Yeah,
cost
I mean, somebody would have to pay for that.
Erode.
But, you know, I see this, Peter, as a potential a model. I hope that we can make this grow with you. You know, I want to be your partner in this deal. And I feel that the things that you do are extraordinary. Your skills, so that's a given.
Well,
but our hospital will benefit from this, and you know, people from around the U.S. This is not a regional concept. Actually, some of these people eventually will come from around here.
Sure.
But Peter, I think there's a great potential here.
I do. Yes.
Uh-huh. Let me, with your permission, expand the discussion just a little.
Yeah. Let's take a short break. We welcome your phone calls at 1-800-TALK-997. We'll be back in just a moment.
An emergency room that sees patients in 15 minutes? Galicia guarantees. A fully staffed, fully equipped ER facility, Galicia Heart Hospital's ER is next door to one of the country's most renowned heart clinics. Driving a few extra miles may mean faster ER access, because it's not how long it takes to get to an emergency room, it's how long it takes to get in. While the national average wait is 2 hours, Galicia guarantees 15 minutes on North Woodlawn, just 2.5 minutes south of K96.
At Kansas Nephrology Physicians, we care for your kidneys. Our physicians manage kidney disease, high blood pressure, and osteoporosis. Our founder was the first nephrologist in the state. We're the first in Wichita to offer nighttime dialysis and the first to return to one-time use of the artificial kidney. But most importantly, we place you, the patient, first. If you have kidney problems, call us at 1-800-263-3366. I'm Dr. Dennis Ross, president of Kansas Nephrology Physicians.
People often ignore the danger symptoms that might be the warning signs of a stroke. These are called TIAs, or mini strokes, warning signs of serious trouble ahead. In fact, a person who has had a TIA is 10 times more likely to suffer a stroke. If you ever have trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding, severe headaches, or numbness or weakness in your face, arm, or leg, even for a brief moment, see your physician immediately. For more information, call the Galicia Medical Group at 316-858-2288.
8. I deliver your Sunday paper every week.
7. We work on the same floor.
1 in 8 Americans is struggling with hunger.
6. Our kids walk to school together every day,
including millions of children and seniors.
5. We chat in the elevator at work sometimes.
4. I'm your cashier at the grocery store.
Who's the 1 in 8 in your life that needs help? You can make a difference through Feeding America at feedingamerica.org/1in8. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
An emergency room that sees patients in 15 minutes? Galicia guarantees. A fully staffed, fully equipped ER facility, Galicia Heart Hospital's ER is next door to one of the country's most renowned heart clinics. Driving a few extra miles may mean faster ER access, because it's not how long it takes to get to an emergency room, it's how long it takes to get in. While the national average wait is 2 hours, Galicia guarantees 15 minutes on North Woodlawn, just 2.5 minutes south of K96.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. We're here with Dr. Peter McCander and Dr. Arnon Krongrad. And Peter, Arnon is truly a guest. He's from Miami, and he came to Galicia Heart Hospital to do a special kind of procedure. Now, you are a pioneer in the field of less invasive surgery for prostate removal. And that's a given. You've done tons of stuff. You have your own research institute, and you have worked with us a lot. Now, when you came to Galicia Heart Hospital, you used a robot for part of this procedure. Everything worked pretty well, as you told me, and I'm really proud of that. I'm happy about that.
Well, I think you should be proud, because it's one thing, as I said before, for the hospital to function really, really well, you know, for the guy who it's named after. But the fact that it would function flawlessly when a new team of surgeons would walk in is really a testament to the quality of what's going on.
Right. And people are always asking this question. They're saying, okay, look, can you use that robot that you guys have over there for my surgery of the prostate? And we haven't done that because there's a different kind of device used here in town by some of the surgeons. But this, you could have done the surgery without the robot, true or false?
I once kidded somebody that, give me a pair of chopsticks and I'll take your prostate out. That's obviously an exaggeration, but the point is, the robot, first of all, technically is not a robot, but leaving the semantics aside, the robot has become a terrible distraction, in my view, a distraction from the fundamental elements of what determines surgical quality, and it is over and over and over the surgeon's experience.
Mm-hmm.
The right surgeon is going to pick the right instrument. Tiger Woods is going to use the right club. Pick your Tiger Woods. Let him figure out what to use.
Yeah. Well, very, very interesting, and, you know, it's a great concept. Peter, it's a little bit like the concept of our outreach clinics. We
yes,
have outreach
is.
Clinics from one side of the state to the next. Sometimes we do procedures in some of those towns, heart cath or something like that. But
well,
it is.
Well, as Dr. Krongrad said, it's taking the treatment to the patient. It's making a sophisticated house call with higher technology than the old doctor used to come with his bag with three medications in it, you know. And I think that that's great. And in our health environment where there are patients that are not adequately insured or they face a complicated surgery and they need that kind of treatment, you know, what amazes me is that folks that don't have the insurance and the means are able to look and search and do some healthcare planning and read up and find out and get in touch with amazing doctors like Dr. Krongrad. So,
but do you think the internet helps? Or how can you account for that? Because I think that's a great question, Arnon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how this gentleman found you, that's important. I mean, it's the same thing with us. People find us in various ways because we do a lot of things that are pretty special,
Or, you know, Jody, how they even know to look, you know?
Right.
Would you have – well, maybe you would have known, but would I have known to look for probably wouldn't. I wouldn't have even known where to find Dr. Krongrad.
Let's discuss the distribution of information about surgical services. The internet is one of the tools that patients use. It is increasingly a common tool that patients use. But the internet is a double-edged sword. First of all, too much information, if you will. If you look up toothache, you're going to get 100 million pages of information.
Right. How do you sort through that when you're a patient who's farming in South Carolina? I mean,
well,
sounds like a tough thing.
It doesn't matter who you are. There's no referee, and you're not a subject expert, so it becomes overwhelming. The internet can be useful. It can certainly help you to learn which questions to ask, but it doesn't necessarily answer the questions in a way that is unbiased. Let's broaden the discussion. We've focused on individual patients. The fact is that Mobile Surgery International, the company that is running these services in cancer, in orthopedics, is working with consumer-directed health services, with health savings account, with employers, with large payers. In other words, everybody needs help. It is not only the uninsured patient who needs to preserve treatment choices and treatment quality. Anybody who is involved in the delivery of surgical services is potentially a beneficiary of a model wherein we preserve the quality and help you to overcome the geographic and economic barriers that you face. And those barriers are faced by everybody. Our government is facing those barriers.
Yeah.
Again, Mobile Surgery International is devoted to expanding the model and teaching it so that we can help eliminate the waste, cut to cost, travel if we need to, don't necessarily have to, as long as choice and quality are preserved.
Well, here's a very important concept. And Peter, you know, if somebody comes into the emergency room, they need our services, they're having a heart attack, they are just thrust into a system that they emerge from going, wow, what happened to my cost here?
That's right.
You know, they're not going to stop and ask, what does that stent cost? I mean, what does this cost? I mean, these are people that are in distress, right?
Well, they just want acute help.
Right.
You know.
But then sometimes their biggest stress is when they get out, because then they face a lot of bills. Now, if they have insurance, everything works out pretty well. And they still now, I mean, they're still increasing responsibility on the individual.
Yes.
But there's nothing too transparent about it on the front end. You know, they can't really make that choice. If it's a stable situation, maybe they can. But usually, in today's world, they will go wherever their insurance company sends them or wherever they want to go if they have that choice. But they really don't know what the cost is. And the system that we've created here, Arnon, for medical travelers, people coming here from Canada and around the country for services similar to yours, but Not similar in a way. I mean, stents or knee replacements, the same kind of concept that you have here, but done by our own people here. They are coming here knowing full well what the total cost is, so that's totally transparent. They know what the likelihood that they will get out in a certain time frame is. We have data on that, so we can give them that likelihood. If there is a complication, it's our responsibility, not theirs. Basically, though, they can say, this is what it's going to cost me, and this is usually what it's going to cost me in terms of my time away from work or my recovery time. So now we've bolstered that tremendously by bringing someone like you in, or your company in, to do these special kinds of things. In both instances, the patient knows that there's a cap on his cost. Is that the way you see it?
I think there are elements shared between the two models. You're talking about inbound medical tourism,
yeah,
to use a common term. We do that in Miami. Patients come to me. You know,
lots, I'm sure.
From very far away. That's a traditional inbound medical tourism model. Now, there's a new phenomenon in the United States of outbound medical tourism, and we don't have enough time to draw all the distinctions, but I'll symbolize it by saying that medical travel picks airlines, mobile surgery picks sutures. It's a very different concept. So we'll walk into a hospital like yours, and we'll say to you, here's a new procedure that you can do without any capital expense at all. And you can pass those savings on to all your clients, corporate, individual, whatever. We'll walk into a benefits director and say, you know, I see that you're paying less for knee replacement, but how many days of physical therapy are you building in? Who makes your prosthesis? Is it FDA approved? We'll educate you as a consumer. If you look at our knee replacement packages, for example, they're markedly less costly, but that's not even the point. We're not after cost containment. That's a byproduct. We're after choice and quality. So you're going to get the physical therapy. You're going to get an FDA approved prosthesis. Our surgeon, who we're going to supply you, has done 4,500 total joints. Quality is built in. What excites me, having done this model outside the borders, we've developed centers in Trinidad, Panama, Mexico, is that we've now been able to come in the United States. This is, in fact, the first domestic center for mobile surgery international, and we've been able to deliver the same quality and the same cost efficiency domestically for the American market, for the American employer and insurance company struggling to understand quality, to contain costs, and to help broaden the access to choice and quality. It's a tremendous innovation and offers enormous potential for us to help much more broadly than the patient we helped yesterday.
Yeah, no, I that's the way I see it. And you know, the thing that highlights this, though, is that this patient was paying for it himself.
Mm-hmm.
If he were on Medicare, if he had an insurance plan, he wouldn't be looking around for our hospital. He would go somewhere else.
But the insurance companies are talking to us now. That's the point, because they're struggling to deliver. They're getting squeezed by their clients, their employers who are hiring out these insurance companies to take care of their employees. They're squeezing them and saying, look, you're costing us too much.
Yeah.
So we can help, and that's why we're working with insurance companies directly, because we can help them just as we help the individual patient. And we're seeing cost reductions for some of the largest insurance companies in the country based on the way we're doing the transparent fixed packaging.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really, it's not the entire solution to the situation we face in healthcare, but it is a large part of it. It really is. And, you know, for me, I like dealing with the patients more directly. Because, I mean, I'm sorry that they have to pay for it, but we can tell them what it's going to cost, and we can really make it as convenient as possible for them, as livable as possible to have that procedure. You know, and there's still things that you have to do. I mean, in our case, Peter, if we put a stent in somebody, we have to buy the stent. You know, there's a price we have to pay for that. We can't discount that in any way. But certainly the quality is there. That's one thing we know. We know what our history is. You know what your history is with patients having these kinds of procedures, and that counts for a ton. It really, really does. If you have a high complication rate, you can't put a cap on anything, you know, because then it's going to crush you economically. We'll be back with the second half of Take Your Health to Heart after these messages. We're back with Dr. Arnon Krongrad and Dr. Peter McCander. And we've been talking about some of the most complex things in medicine that you really see today. One is now we see medical tourism becoming a factor. We have patients here coming, Arnon, from Canada, from around the U.S. because it's cheaper and also because of quality considerations. But, you know, if you look at what's happening around us, a lot of people with no insurance are what I call underinsured. People who say, okay, you know, I'm great, but I have a deductible of $10,000, so I want the cheapest service I can get. Where can I go? We see outsourcing in industry today all over the world. Now, in medicine, there's some outsourcing going on where people actually leave our country, go somewhere in the Far East. India is really emerging as one of those areas where people go for care, and Singapore, various other places. And what I see now is we can establish a center here where the price is very competitive with those places, but you don't have to travel around the world. And, Peter, wouldn't it be a daunting task to have a bypass operation, let's say in India, which is not absolutely easy to get to, and then 5 or 6 days later get on an airplane and come home, or to have a knee replacement and do that? I just think that is really tough.
I can't imagine it because of the inconvenience, and you know what, like, taking an airplane flight from one city to another is, let alone halfway around the world, after you've got wounds and stitches and everything else. And if I were such a patient, the first thing I'd be asking is, why couldn't I have this surgery done in my own neighborhood, in my own town,
right,
blocks but from where I live?
Surely. And one of the things that happens is it's economics. I mean, the people are doing this because they have to pay all of it or a lot of it, and it's cheaper to go there. So, Arnon, what we've done here is we've created the same model, only you don't have to travel around the world, and the cost is just a fraction of what it would be to have a bypass surgery, say, in Miami. I mean, the cost of a bypass operation in Miami in some hospitals is six figures, a coronary bypass surgery. It is a huge, huge cost, and there is no discount for the person who says, look, I want to make a deal with you, I want to pay for this. You know, I'm not sure about all of your hospitals, but certainly in our region here, that opportunity does not exist. So we can tell the patient, this is what it costs, this is the cap, and this is what you can expect. And unfortunately, that opportunity to use this kind of market model in medicine is really scant. You just don't see it very often. And that's what you're doing, that's what we're doing, and I'm so pleased that we can work together on that. Let's talk about prostate surgery in general, or prostate treatment. One of the things I've noticed is that, and we talk about it on this show a lot of people now are saying, you know what, you have prostate cancer, you're over the age of, pick a number, 70, 75, don't even think about surgery, don't even think about radiation, just live it out, do the watch and wait. And we have patients who come in and go, man, what's going to happen to me? And one of the things I tell them is, well, if this cancer spreads, then you cannot survive it. But it seems like there's an effort now to cut the costs. And in fact, in some countries like Sweden, especially some socialized countries, they're saying, don't even do a PSA at a certain age. And for me, that's just phenomenally dangerous because I see people who are quite young at age 70, for instance, who have a lot of living to do. They don't want to take that chance. What's your perspective on that? You're a thought leader in this field.
I think we really need to take a step way back and understand, first of all, that approach to any disease, to some extent, is a matter of social trends and popularity. I mean, if you look at the breast cancer awareness program, I mean, the fact that October is Pink Month now represents just a massive social movement that is intended to do good. Do all these movements do nothing but good? Is there a risk in over-promoting certain things? So, for example, is mammography, should it be done for every woman at a certain frequency? Is there a risk that we will over-diagnose certain nodules and lead to certain procedures that really would never have bothered the woman who had them? The same sorts of trends obviously apply to all diseases, including prostate cancer. And one of the expressions that I've been hearing lately, meaning in the last few months, that I find fascinating is, prostate cancer is overtreated, as if to say it is the only disease that is overtreated. The simple fact is that every disease is overtreated, whether it's acne, hypertension, or prostate cancer. Look at hypertension. Is every man or woman who has hypertension going to die of hypertension? Of course not. One will die of pancreatic cancer. One will be hit by a car. So there's a proportion of patients with any disease who is overtreated. There's clearly a population that is undertreated. If you look at prostate cancer, 500 men a week. Jumbo jet crashing into a mountain, you know, every week. Are those men being overtreated? Of course not. They're being way undertreated. So the question becomes, where is the right balance? What I think has been lost is a sense of balance lately towards the size of doing less. And the reason that is potentially risky is because you cannot make an assessment for an individual patient based upon population data. You have to look at many competing risks, much as I said, hypertension versus the rare pancreatic cancer, right? With prostate cancer, you've got, you know, age, obesity, smoking, diabetes. All these things have to go into a mix of trying to assess whether a man should be tested. And the potential danger of what I'm hearing in the popular press now is that we will begin to deny individuals the right to know in their situation what risk they might be facing. A PSA is a blood test, right?
Yeah.
It's easy
it's
to do.
It's a cheap test. Mm-hmm. Really, it's a cheap test. Peter, there's been a national initiative with PSA levels, a national initiative to diagnose early and treat prostate cancer. And now people are saying
it's been very effective. I
mean, yeah, look at that, it's been greatly effective.
Look at the stage of diagnosis. Stages, how extensive is the disease? Since the introduction of PSA, there has been a marked reduction in the number of people who are diagnosed in advanced prostate cancer stages. As you said correctly, that is the stage at which the disease is almost uniformly fatal.
Yeah.
We cannot cure that disease.
How are you going to cure that? You cannot. I mean, these people are going to die 99.9% of the time.
So the stage has come way down to a curable point because of the PSA test. Now, do you want to know if you have a potentially fatal illness? That is an individual decision.
Yeah,
and that needs to be
preserved.
But
people really need to understand the consequences here. You know, Peter, there's no national initiative like that in heart disease and stroke. And that's what is really alarming to me. You know, there's never been anything that we see in the national press or put on by the government or anything to diagnose, to make an early diagnosis of people who may have heart disease. In other words, asymptomatic heart disease. Most people have the diagnosis of coronary heart disease made by a heart attack or sudden death. That's how you make the diagnosis. Those are terrible ways to make the diagnosis. Now, we are lucky enough that people come to us with symptoms and people are more aware of symptoms today. But there's no one out there beating the drum to say, do treadmill tests, listen to the carotid arteries, do duplex scans to make sure that somebody's not going to have a stroke. I don't hear that drum, do you?
No, I don't. It's the number one killer.
It's the number one and number three killer. And what happens, Arnon, is that in cardiology, we have a lot of those tools right now. You know, a CT scan of the heart, in our hospital, at Galicia Heart Hospital, that's a $400 test. That's more expensive than a PSA, but it's not ridiculously expensive as a screening test. I mean, it's not something you do every year. That's a darn good screening test, Peter. Very good for most people,
yes.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, a stress test, even a basic simple stress test, is a pretty darn good test to diagnose coronary disease. But as you pointed out, some people are going to have false positives. You know, some people are going to have a CT scan that shows a lot of calcium and they didn't really have coronary disease, so then you can go in and say, well, your arteries are sick, but, you know, you didn't have a blockage yet. So we put them on a program to try to diminish this effect. But it's a real, real struggle, and insurance companies don't want to buy into that. You know, they don't want to make a diagnosis of coronary heart disease because then costs just escalate. The person likely have a heart cath, going to live, you know, is not going to die. Going to have a stent, yep, the risk is 1 in 1,000, so we're probably going to survive that. Live to tell another story, people go on and on and
so
on, and the costs go on.
We have to be very careful to identify our objectives because, as you correctly are implying, death is less expensive than life.
Yeah, right?
So if
absolutely.
The patient drops dead, obviously, the insurance company is going to save a lot of money. But this gets me back to the discussion that you were having a few minutes ago about the notion of travel. I want to come back to that because I think we're losing sight of some of the objectives and a potential putting patients at potential risk. The concept of travel has been around us since man started. Okay, so the ancient Greeks used to travel to the spas of Asclepius because they thought they could get treatments there that they couldn't get in their village. Right? Patients have always traveled for choice and for quality. You would go to the Mayo Clinic because in your village you couldn't get the treatment that they had over there. Treatment choice. You would go there because you think that they would have quality that you could not get at home. Choice and quality have always been there. Travel has always been there. What has changed recently is for economic reasons and globalization, we are starting to see travel not for choice and quality, but for cost efficiency. Mm-hmm. Medical tourism, if you want to think about it, if you want to call it that, is really a strange term. It's not really medical in the broad sense. Nobody's going to Bombay to check his cholesterol. You're going for major surgeries. It's not even medical travel. It's surgical travel.
Right.
It's certainly not tourism. nobody's going to check out the rainforest who's about to have his heart valve replaced, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there are people who'll look around the village for a minute, but the main reason you're there is to get the
surgical surgery.
And
it's travel, and while cost efficiency is an absolutely fine and legitimate consideration, it should never be the first. This is still about choice and quality. So if we can preserve choice and quality and overcome the economic barriers with mobile surgery the way we're doing, then we've kept the focus in place. And my argument is that if you use a surgeon-driven model to look at surgical travel and you work, you take the employers and you take the insurance companies by the hand, then you can help to do all those things without necessarily incredible inconvenience for the patients. What, again, I pointed out to you that here in Kansas we've just, as of yesterday, developed the first center for a domestic program in mobile surgery, which up until now we had been doing outside our borders. It worked flawlessly. Patients home this morning. Cost was cut by 60% out of the gate. I'm excited because we're now starting to see those same cost efficiencies in Florida. You said that Miami is expensive for heart surgery.
Yeah.
I guess
it is expensive.
Right.
I mean, I know the numbers, because we look at them. And you know, what we're charging for an open heart operation to people from Canada and underinsured people here is in the teens of thousands of dollars versus 100 in the teens, like 120 or 115 or 130,000.
Here's the exciting observation. There is excess capacity, just as there is here in Kansas, everywhere. And we're out to identify it and pass the savings on to everybody else.
Yeah. Now, I think it's a great mission. I think it's an exciting time. And it's also, it provides hope for people that are looking for solutions to the extraordinary cost. I mean, I'm always looking at our hospital. We are as a board, we are as an administration, as physicians, Peter and I and other people. How can we keep the cost down and always retain our quality and make it better every day? That's one of the things that we look at in depth. We welcome your phone calls at 1-800-TALK-997. We'll take a short break.
An emergency room that sees patients in 15 minutes? Galicia guarantees. A fully staffed, fully equipped ER facility, Galicia Heart Hospital's ER is next door to one of the country's most renowned heart clinics. Driving a few extra miles may mean faster ER access, because it's not how long it takes to get to an emergency room, it's how long it takes to get in. While the national average wait is 2 hours, Galicia guarantees 15 minutes on North Woodlawn, just 2.5 minutes south of K96.
You experience pain or weakness in your legs while walking. Don't ignore these symptoms, as they could be signs of peripheral vascular disease, a condition suffered by over 8 million Americans. The most common symptom is aching in the legs or hips while walking that disappears with rest. Many folks, however, have worse symptoms. They may have color changes or ulcers that won't heal, or they may have excessive tiredness in their legs. This is the most common condition which leads to amputation and must be addressed. Simple, non-surgical techniques, including balloon angioplasty and stenting, may, in fact, make this condition a great deal better. A doctor can diagnose this condition by taking blood pressures in your arms and legs during rest and exercise. And even more importantly, we have learned that about 60% of all patients with peripheral vascular disease have silent coronary heart disease and are at high risk for heart attack. For more information, call Galicia Medical Group at 316-858-2288.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark, and the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Wow. Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
An emergency room that sees patients in 15 minutes? Galicia guarantees. A fully staffed, fully equipped ER facility, Galicia Heart Hospital's ER is next door to one of the country's most renowned heart clinics. Driving a few extra miles may mean faster ER access, because it's not how long it takes to get to an emergency room, it's how long it takes to get in. While the national average wait is 2 hours, Galicia guarantees 15 minutes on North Woodlawn, just 2.5 minutes south of K96.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit. Come meet bugs and birds. You may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The silly you. The curious you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org. brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Did you know that heart disease is the number one killer of women in this country, more than breast cancer or cervical cancer? Many people think of a heart attack as a male phenomenon, but in fact, nearly one in two women will die of heart disease. Women also have atypical symptoms, including shortness of breath, fatigue, and trouble sleeping. Give yourself a chance to beat the odds. Work with your doctor to stay fit. Lower your blood pressure. If you have risk factors, get a stress test. Call the Galicia Medical Group at 316-858-2288.
This is President Barack Obama. In the story of America, the greatest chapters are moments of challenge, when we see people serving their country and one another. Volunteers who step forward into hospital corridors and church basements, along levees and fire lines. And the next chapter is yours to help write. Sign up to volunteer at usaservice.org. That's usaservice.org. Let's renew America together.
A message from Renew America Together, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, trust is eroding generally. It's not just the doctor. You trust Wasserman?
People trust me.
Welcome back. We have a caller. Let's go to the phone lines and speak with Don. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. I've got a female friend that's approximately 46 years old that lives in Plainville, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And last Friday night or afternoon, she laid down. She wasn't feeling well. She's prone to migraine headaches. But she said this didn't feel like a migraine. And her son went in and to wake her, and she couldn't talk. They took her to the hospital. They did an EKG at the time. They said everything was normal and gave her a couple of Tylenol and sent her home. Monday, she saw a neurologist in Hayes, and they said everything was okay and sent her home.
Mm.
She, at this time, she still has really slurred speech, and she's got to take a long time to get her sentences worked through. And
wow, I mean, this sounds like a really tough situation. I feel better that she saw the neurologist fairly soon in the game, but Peter, it sounds to me there's something definitely wrong here.
Sounds to me like she's had a stroke.
Yeah, it does sound that way. You know, what we find is that when people have these transient events, like she had the first time, where she had a headache and, you know, she wasn't speaking well for a while, and then she got better, generally...
She still has the headache.
Okay, and she still has a slurred speech, but it seems like it went away for a while, and now it came back.
No,
and
not really.
It did not. Okay,
so I misunderstood that. And it went from 1 week to another, so it's definitely been there more than 48 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
When that occurs and it goes away, we call it a TIA, or a transient ischemic attack. That's what we usually call it. And we take some very swift action on that. If anybody has a symptom like that, Peter, we tell them to get help right away.
Absolutely, because it may be your only premonitory sign that a stroke is next in line.
Right, and usually it leads to a stroke. Now, you know, it's hard for Peter and I to sit here and say, well, she had a stroke, and yet she saw a neurologist, and he didn't think so. But everything you're telling us sounds that way. Peter, would you agree with that?
Yes. Did you get an explanation from the neurologist as to what happened?
No.
Okay. I would, in the absence of that, I think I would go rapidly for a second opinion.
Yeah. A lot of times these things occur in a very difficult-to-diagnose manner. You know, it may be a small area of the brain. It may not show up really well on an MRI or a CAT scan. You know, we always want to know what an echocardiogram looks like. Is there a clot in the heart that could have embolized to the brain causing some event like this and some permanent damage? But whenever a person has trouble understanding or speaking, where there's a difference, a discernible change, they're slurring their words or they're not comprehending and just speaking as fluently as usual, then that's a very, very important sign. In my opinion, a dangerous sign.
I think, Don, what you've observed here is definitely not normal, and you really do need an explanation for it.
Yeah, no question. Now, it could be that she had the headache and somebody gave her some medicine, and the pain medicine is causing her to slur her speech or be a little dull. I mean, those are things that we don't know. But I think that I agree with Peter on this one. I would go ahead and get a second opinion and make absolutely sure that there's nothing wrong. This doesn't sound like a trivial problem to me.
If she was brought to your clinic, would you be able to diagnose something like that?
Well, surely. You know, we have neurologists who come to Glacier Heart Hospital. We would consult with that person. We would probably do all the other things that Peter and I would do initially, just to look and see if there was any evidence of at least a propensity to have a clot form somewhere. We'd look at the neck arteries. Peter, those are basic things
sure.
we would do.
And maybe scan, MRI of the brain, and we do have neurologists that come to Galicia Heart Hospital on a regular basis. So, and this is a sort of problem we do see a lot of. So we'd be happy to be of service if we could.
Right. And, Peter, sometimes what we find is that a young patient like this doesn't have vascular disease, nothing else wrong with them, actually has a little hole in the heart, which is called a PFO. And, Peter, what is that?
It's a persistent foramen ovale, which is a little atrial septal defect. But the problem can happen when blood clots from the venous system can enter the heart, and instead of going and being filtered out in the lungs, they can cross over into the arterial system, and then they unfortunately can get up into the circulation of the brain.
Right.
Cause a stroke.
Right. And it's one of the things that we look at in every young patient who has a stroke that's just not clear cut.
Right. And otherwise
doesn't
healthy.
Have a, yeah, right. You otherwise wouldn't. Healthy individual. And the way we do that, Don, is to put a little probe down into the esophagus, look right at that wall in the heart to see if it's intact. And a lot of people have this problem. Most of the time it doesn't cause any trouble. But a trivial clot in the leg, in a vein in the leg, can actually, through that mechanism, migrate into the brain and cause a stroke. It's something we just have to look at.
And there may also be other causes. If there's any kind of vasospastic disease going on, if there's migraines, things like that, there's obviously problems with circulation to the brain, and some of them can be just reversible and transient. But I think, you know, any neurologic complaint that, like you voiced, that lasts more than 24 hours is certainly of concern. And any sort of transient thing like that in a young person definitely is a worrisome thing that needs to be investigated.
Yeah. Great, Don. If we can help, let us know, and thank you for the call.
Good luck to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, and to your friend. Now, it's interesting. We spent most of the morning talking actually about, at least in part, the cost of medical care. And we're doing our best to keep that cost down in various ways. And I think physicians around the country are trying to do that as well. But the mechanisms aren't really there. The only way that I know I can keep costs down to a patient is if they're self-insured, we can charge less at the hospital gate. I mean, that's what we do in these arrangements. But, you know, when it comes to testing and things like that, that's the only – if someone's on Medicare, the less tests you order, the less cost, or the less things you do. You know, you say, well, you have a blocked artery here in your heart, but, you know, we'll just let it go. We'll just treat that with medicine and hope for the best. People don't usually want to do that. People like the patient Don just called about. I mean, she's looking for an answer here. You know, the answer wasn't clear cut. People want answers. And the only way you can get answers for them, Arnon, generally speaking, is to do some testing to get objective data to find out where you are. And then that, when you punch that button, then you're going to spend money for someone, the insurance company, the individual, or the patient. And that's what people expect. You know, I think this screening that you do, or that we do around the country now for PSA, that's a cheap test, right?
It's $5 in my office.
Yeah, that's not a big button to push. But when they have surgery or radiation, then the cost starts mounting for those patients. And obviously one of the objectives here, in a global sense, is to not treat anybody that doesn't absolutely need to be treated, because that has an economic cost. Interesting stuff. Well, Peter, it's always great to have you on the show. And as you said, Arnon, the stars were aligned somehow for all of us to get, for you and our institution to get together. We're honored by that. We're privileged by it. It's great to have somebody like you come in here and be a part of our team. I really mean that.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
We hope all of you have a great weekend, a great week, and remember to take your health to heart.